It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Insurance giant Aetna has announced it is completely withdrawing from Obamacare exchanges, citing massive financial losses, $700 million from 2014 to 2016, and another $200 million this year. Aetna also announced it will no longer offer individual plans in Delaware or Nebraska next year after revealing its intentions to leave Iowa and Virginia. Some have also blamed uncertainty over the future of Obamacare.
There's other fixes we can work on that'll help reduce deductibles and improve quality, but that's only going to happen if we genuinely work across the aisle.
Health and Human Services Secretary Dr. Tom Price drew this conclusion, quote, Aetna's decision to completely withdraw from the Obamacare exchanges adds to the mountain of evidence that Obamacare has failed the American people. The Republican push to repeal and replace Obamacare has been a hot topic at town hall meetings across the country after the House passed its bill. New Jersey Congressman Tom MacArthur received national attention after negotiating an amendment with the Conservative Freedom Caucus to give states more flexibility with the hope it would address soaring premiums. Some of his constituents vented their anger.
You have been the single greatest threat to my family in the entire world.
MacArthur told his constituents he's trying to help them.
I don't want you to have to move to another state either to get health care. I want everyone, every American, to be able to afford and get and have continuous health care insurance.
Democrats have been criticizing Republicans for their efforts to scrap Obamacare, suggesting it would hurt people with pre-existing conditions. California Democrat Senator Kamala Harris earned four Pinocchios from the Washington Post for claiming that 129 million people with pre-existing conditions could be denied coverage. She's not the only one talking about doomsday.
This is still a major public health crisis.
While senators wait for the Congressional Budget Office analysis of the House health care bill, I'm told that's expected sometime in the next 2 weeks, Republican senators continue meeting, seeing if they can find consensus on a plan that will pass in their chamber. Brett?
Okay, that was Mike Emanuel on Fox News just not that long ago, and it was just recent news that Aetna is pulling out of Obamacare. So what does that mean? It's highly personal for each of us. Each of us has health problems. We have children who get sick. We have wives and husbands and aunts and uncles. We all need health care, and we need good health care. And we care about who our doctors are, and we care about what our insurance covers. And some people are drowning under the weight of not only their premiums but their deductibles. And so now we hear that Obamacare looks like it might die. And so the House is locked up. They reached some sort of an agreement, but now it goes to the Senate, and they're not sure they're going to pass that. So how are we to think, and what are we to make of all of this? And what should we be for, and what should we be against? Well, I've asked a healthcare expert to join us this morning. His name is Devin Herrick, Dr. Devin Herrick. He's, by the way, a senior fellow at the National Center for Policy Analysis. They're based in Dallas. Their chief executive officer is Lieutenant Colonel Alan West. And they have offices, of course, in Washington, D.C. as well, and are providing tons of great information for Americans on this and many other topics. Dr. Herrick, thank you for joining me this morning.
Well, thanks for having me.
Hey, let me ask you right up front. What is your expertise? Why do you know about healthcare?
Well, I'm a health economist. I began my career working as a bean counter for a hospital. So I'm one of those people that, former accountant, hospital accountant, I was in charge of the people that create those bills that nobody can read. Well, you know, I can't read them either, to be quite honest. But
so the numbers, you've been crunching healthcare numbers for a long time. So that helps you. You know, when you can make that out, then you see those ledgers And you actually, I know that moneyed people, people that understand the numbers, kind of understand this issue better than most. And so our job is going to be to try to explain it here, Devin. I think that probably not a single person listening to me does not have a concern about this or a personal story, you know, about what's happening with them in terms of healthcare. So before we launch into the future, let's talk about the present. I'm really curious to know how you view the current state of Obamacare. And Aetna just announced they're pulling out. What is the current state of Obamacare and healthcare for people in this country?
It would be hard. I would be hard-pressed to design a more dysfunctional system, to be perfectly honest. Obamacare makes most people worse off, so few individuals can benefit. Now, the reason that is in healthcare, the distribution of healthcare spending is such that the sickest, you know, 1% consume nearly a quarter of all healthcare dollars. The sickest, you know, 10% consume about 2/3, and of course, the sickest 20% consume about 80% of healthcare dollars. Well, Obamacare purposely tried to increase the cross subsidies, going from healthy young folks to those that are, you know, older and less healthy. The problem with that is that, of course, if you're a 22-year-old, you know, male who's in good health, you know, you're starting out life, you're trying to maybe get your first good job, you're trying to get married, start a family. You don't particularly, you know, want to have your health care costs at, you know, double what they otherwise would be, so that Obamacare can shovel money into Cadillac plans for other people.
But Devin, let me interrupt you, because it seems to me that what I've heard back is that millennials are thrilled about this. They're getting covered. They can stay on their parents' insurance policy till they're 27. That this is just fine with them. I have not heard it. I know what you're saying is true, but I haven't heard young people complain about their premiums. I don't understand that.
Well, keep in mind that the Obama administration wanted to have something like 40% of the enrollees to be the young folks, people under age, I think it was like 35. Well, they didn't get it. They got much, much less. And the reason why they got much, much less is not just because, you know, the millennials are balking. It's also because the millennials were allowed to hop on their parents' employer plan. And the parents' employer plan is not as dysfunctional as the Obamacare exchanges. So it's, in a way, in a roundabout way, the architects of Obamacare shot themselves in the foot by giving the, you know, the healthiest part of the population an out. And a lot of people are saying, wait a minute, well, that's why there are so few enrollees, young enrollees in the Obamacare exchanges, because, hey, they've had a much better deal by hopping on the parents' plan.
Well, you know, I guess let me say this right up front, because we're going to get to this discussion later. But, of course, you and I both know that they didn't really shoot themselves in the foot. They're actually achieving the goal they wanted, and that was to destroy the American healthcare system so that they could replace it with a big daddy, big government, father knows best healthcare system for everyone. And we'll get to that. So it is imploding, as I'm sure they knew it was going to. So, but Devin, as a look, I'm hearing a lot of stories about people who are middle class having their premiums, you know, just absolutely be off the charts, almost in tears, people. I've heard such terrible stories. And then they pay these horrible premiums, and then their deductible is so high that they end up paying out of the pocket for normal healthcare expenses. It's really been so hard on the economics of the middle class. Is that across the board, or is that just a few people?
Oh, no, that's across the board. If you look at who enrolled in the exchanges, I think it's 86-87% of the enrollees are those getting subsidies. And the reason is Obamacare is such a horrible deal for those who have to pay their own way. I mean, the story you described is essentially my wife, you know, a small business owner. You know, healthy, she has spent her whole, I mean, she keeps the dietary supplement industry in business single-handedly, I think. You know, goes to the gym, does yoga. I mean, she is just as health conscious as you can imagine. And last year, her premiums went up to, I think it was basically $6,000 for a $65,000 to $7,000 deductible. She literally said, you know, I'm basically being forced to write a check, you know, to Blue Cross every month for which I get nothing in return, because, you know, she's not going to spend $6,000-$7,000 for the, you know, worth of out-of-pocket health care. And so that's why I say it was purposely designed to make most people worse off, just to shovel money to, you know, a few cases that are, you know, very costly to cover. And it's not a stable situation. What most people want, if you ask someone who has a moderate income, do you want Obamacare with a sky-high deductible and a sky-is-the-limit, you know, benefit were you to get sick? What they really say is, no, what I want is to be able to see a doctor when I get sick. Most of us don't expect to get cancer and have some dread disease, but we know we'll have to go to the doctor next year. And most folks would like, you know, to be able to afford that, and they can't under Obamacare.
So, and because you are mandated by law, as you said your wife is, to pay that premium, or you get penalized. Now, those penalties have gone into effect, haven't they?
Well, yes, absolutely. The penalties have gone into effect. They stair-step up every year. They're a function of not just a fixed amount, but also of your family income. Now, as you know, the administration issued an executive order, telling basically the IRS and other parts of the government to kind of drag their feet a little bit. So the IRS issued a press release or a media advisory a couple of months ago, saying, "Well, we were this executive order came out telling us to, you know, drag our feet. So what we're going to do is we're not going to reject tax returns where the taxpayer does not disclose their insurance status." Of course, the same press release went on to say, "No, you actually owe the money. It's not legal not to have coverage, and you got to pay a fine. But if you don't tell us, if you don't disclose on a certain form, we're not going to reject those returns." But even doing that did not really, it's technically there is still a mandate, there is still a penalty. And so some future administration could tell the IRS, okay, you go back to, you know, 2016 tax returns and go ahead and audit those people. So it's still hanging over people's heads.
All right, so you mentioned in passing, and let's go back to this, there are people benefiting. Who's benefiting?
Well, the people that are benefiting would be those that are, you know, that really do have serious health issues that could never have gotten coverage. Now, that's a much smaller pool of people than people were led to believe. Over the years, it's maybe 2%, 3% of those in the individual market were sick enough that they literally could not get health coverage. Now, most people that had pre-existing conditions could still get coverage. I mean, they might pay a little extra. They may be required to monitor their blood pressure and keep it in line. They may be required to keep their blood sugar, diabetes, things like that. But most folks could still get health coverage under the old system. And who else would benefit? Well, those whose income is low enough that they get a free ride, that they get they get Obamacare subsidies and the cost-sharing subsidies combined. So, yeah, I mean, there's always going to be winners and losers, but that's why I say most people are worse off, so a few can benefit.
So what are we talking about in terms of money? When we say subsidies for those that can't afford it, and you just gave it a couple of names, subsidies and I forgot what else, but
cost-sharing deductions.
Okay, so what are they like? Can you give us a number? Let's talk about that. We have to take a break. When we come back, let's talk about what kind of a number that looks like. And then I also want to talk about what's this doing to doctors, to hospitals. I want to ask you, you know, if Obamacare dies on the vine, what does that mean to the American people in the interim? There's so many things to talk about. This is our chance to catch up, and this is something that affects each of us, so we really do need to have great information. Dr. Devin Herrick is our guest, and this is Sandy Rios. Be right back after this.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
For Sean Hubbard, the health care debate is a deeply personal one.
Yeah, I had the news on all day.
His son, Navin, was born with a cleft palate and two heart defects. His medical care that first year alone cost nearly $3 million. One source of comfort was having insurance to help pay.
To not have to, like, worry about the bills on top of whether your kid will die.
He worries the current health care reform bill could change that.
You know, I think young, healthy Americans will be assisted the most.
Dr. James Pinkney says patients less likely to need medical care could pay lower premiums under the plan. But the American Medical Association strongly opposed the bill, due in part to how it handles pre-existing conditions like Navin's.
States do have the option to say, okay, if you have a pre-existing condition, your insurance premiums are going to be tremendously higher than someone without.
You're basically saying people who have pre-existing conditions should be punished in some way.
Hubbard would also like to see the overall cost of insurance go down, just not by putting it out of reach from those who need it most.
I've actually had someone say, oh, you should just work more. It's like, please tell me how I can work more and get $3 million in a year, you know?
Yeah, nothing is final yet. The Senate still has to vote on this, and Senator John Cornyn today said you can expect their bill to look a little bit different. He said they'll make it better. Reporting live in Carrollton, Andrea Lucia, CBS 11 News.
All right, CBS 11 out of Dallas, and you heard that story, and those are the kinds of stories that are being used to make the case that the House bill was terrible because allegedly it shuts out people with pre-existing conditions like this terribly ill little boy. And so how can we do that? So we then, out of compassion, say to ourselves, we must cover everyone for everything. How can we withhold insurance? How can one person endure a $3 million medical cost? And so we have to have this group insurance. And so, Devin, how does one counter that kind of logic?
Well, of course, Sandy, that's very hard, without looking hard-hearted. But as an economist, you know, you have to ask yourself, how does one surgery cost $3 million or one series of surgeries? Well, there's a reason why there are surgeries that cost $3 million. It's because we have a law in effect that says, you know, health benefits are unlimited, and if you have a $3 million surgery, we're going to dump money on it and pay it. That's not to say we wouldn't have surgeries or help our health care absent Obamacare. It would probably be a little bit more reasonably priced. I mean, you know, if you say sky is the limit, you will find many providers, hospitals willing to test that limit. And, you know, if you say we'll pay for all drugs regardless of the cost, you just encourage there to be more drugs that have price tags that make a house look cheap. So, you know, it becomes a self-perpetuating prophecy. But something else that we need to realize is that, you know, absent Obamacare, people who had pre-existing conditions were not being kicked off their insurance, but they were encouraged to maintain continuous coverage. Because if they dropped coverage, then they would be underwritten, have to pay a higher premium. But under the old law, as long as people maintained coverage and didn't drop in and out of the marketplace and leave their job and skip a year and then try to climb back in, they were guaranteed access to coverage rates that were not substantially higher than other people.
You know, I can testify to that because, by the way, my guest is Dr. Devin Herrick, who's a senior fellow at the National Center for Policy Analysis. I can testify that I had a very sick, my first child, sick all of her life, tremendous medical bills, lots of surgeries, hospitalizations constantly, medications. You know, it was a hard row, but we had Blue Cross Blue Shield even from her early when she was just born, and we had to keep up with our premiums as you have described, but we did not have to bear. We paid plenty, you know, but we hardly made money, but we were able to pay our insurance premium and we were able to pay whatever costs we incurred, and so it was whatever the details. It was a workable system. It was a workable system, and no one that I know of was turned away from a hospital saying, if you don't have $3 million, your child doesn't get care. So, Devin, with Aetna falling away, and I don't know how many other providers there are. Do you know? Can you quantify that in the Obamacare system?
Well, of course, it varies from, you know, one region, one zip code to the next. So I don't really have numbers off the top of my head, but I do know that a substantial number of zip codes are going to only have either one or, in some cases, no providers or no health insurers in their areas. Now, what you do about those, well, I think you're kind of stuck. And, of course, the regions that only have, you know, zip codes or clusters of zip codes that only have only one or two health insurers, well, the premiums will be very high. And so only those who are getting subsidies through the federal exchange will be able to afford those premiums in most cases. So it's, I mean, the market, the sad truth is the market is collapsing because the rules were so badly written that even the insurers can't make money, despite having, you know, huge subsidies that taxpayers are on the hook for. And it's they still cannot, you know, stay solvent in many areas.
All right, so let me see if I get this straight. So in some states where providers, where there's maybe no provider, maybe one provider, let's say no, those states, you are forced to pay a premium for insurance coverage, but there's no one to provide care for you. Or do you go to the doctor and pay for it out of your pocket? How do you see a doctor?
Well, it's not clear to me how that's going to work. If no insurance company wants to step forward and provide coverage in a given area of, say, you know, rural Kentucky or rural Georgia or you know, elsewhere, or Tennessee, I mean, I don't know how they can. I mean, I guess the mandate would no longer, you know, would qualify. You know, they'd get an exemption, but at the same time, you're not going to have coverage. So what do you do if you need care that you can't pay for out of pocket? I mean, the old system had checks and balances designed not to penalize people with who were ill, but to encourage continuous coverage so that if you left your job, you needed to enroll in individual coverage within, you know, 62 days so that you would not be underwritten, because if you waited beyond that, the insurance company could rightfully say, well, you came with various things, you know, already wrong. Therefore, we're not going to cover that for a waiting period. But if you had maintained continuous coverage, they couldn't do that from when you changed jobs or you know, left your job and wanted to buy individual coverage. So, I mean, really, there was a purpose. And what Obamacare did is break those incentives, create perverse incentives for people to game the system. You know, people to enroll late, get care that's expensive, then stop paying their premiums and drop off after 3 months.
And we need to explain better pre-existing conditions, Devin, because I think we kind of intuitively get it, but I don't think we really fully get it. Like, for instance, some people might, have a terrible accident and not bothered to buy health insurance. And on the way to the hospital, drop by, you know, this is theoretical and silly, but it's actually real, but the details are silly. Drop by the insurance agency and buy health insurance on your way to having major surgery for the fall because you didn't want to pay for a premium for the years prior. And under what people are saying now, thoughtlessly, is that no matter what you have, pre-existing condition, you should be able to be covered. And that's, we are supposed to think ahead for our own lives and prepare. Just like we have homeowners insurance, we have car insurance. We plan for the future in case something happens, and so it is with our health. And so for those people that just simply are trying to not have to pay, carry their load, and I'm sure there's a lot of people out there like that. This is a dream for them. There are others, as we described, we played in that clip, and also I told you about my own daughter, who have really serious problems. And for them, Devin, I think, explain, if you will, those pools, those high-risk pools, which I believe is part of the House plan, and of course it's not their idea, it's been tried before. How do those high-risk pools work?
Well, you've heard about the term invisible high-risk pool. A high-risk pool is essentially a state-run health plan where the state is helping subsidize some of the premiums for high-cost enrollees that can't get coverage anywhere else. Now, that differs from a, quote, invisible high-risk pool, which what I think Maine has tried as well as Alaska. And the invisible part is Alaska, which where healthcare is very expensive because it's just not a lot of supply there. What Alaska did was the state literally said, we're going to take about I think it was like $50 million, give or take. And we were going to reinsure the risk for the very sickest individuals, because the state did not want maybe 50 or 100 or 500 people causing the premiums of the other 25,000 to skyrocket. Because what happens, adverse selection, if you get a disproportionate share of bad risks, that causes rates to rise, which causes healthy folks to bail out of the market, which causes rates to rise more, which causes more healthy folks to leave the market. So the state said, well, we are going to underwrite, use taxpayer funds, we're going to underwrite some of the very sickest people to keep this adverse selection death spiral from occurring. Well, what the House bill, the American Health Care Act, allows is it creates some pots of money that are allocated to states for states to decide how they want to do it. They could do it as a traditional risk pool. They could do it as a subsidy that, you know, they could use an invisible risk pool or a reinsurance mechanism. But it would be up to the states to decide what works best for them. And it's a mechanism to try to create an environment where a few unlucky individuals do not cause the rest of the insurance market to get priced out of the market. And really, it protects the risk pool. It protects the health of the insurance risk pool from deteriorating and collapsing.
And provides health care for those people that have serious illness. You know, I wonder if a way to look at this, you're the mathematician here, but is kind of a partial way of understanding this, you know, here I go in an untested, uncharted waters here. You know, if you have, let's say you're taking a class and you had five tests, and you made an A on four of those tests, but on one of them you made a D. You know that your average, your grade would be, you'd be lucky if it would be a C. Because it just, the one bad grade just totally poisons whatever other excellence you might have achieved. And I kind of look at it that way. That's mm-hmm. how I help understand it, is that it's like one really serious illness makes everybody be pulled down to levels that they can't manage. And take out the bad risk, put them in a different pool, and still insure them, but don't enter them into the averages of all the regular people who are mostly, for the most part, healthy. And you come out with a much better system. It doesn't mean that the high-risk people are not covered. They would be, just be covered in a different way, but not different doctors, but just different pool of money. And that makes a tremendous amount of sense, Devin, and that message is just not penetrating, I think, American people right now.
Well, and in fact, I think the news clip that you ran where they talked about states being allowed to charge people with pre-existing conditions more, well, the bill in the House does not really do that. The House bill specifically prevents states from allowing insurance companies within the state to price premiums based on risk. The bill does not allow women to be charged more than men, even though women's costs are higher than men. It does not allow, you know, any of those protections to be rolled away. What it does do is, if a state creates a system, if a state creates a high-risk pool or an invisible high-risk pool or some mechanism that does protect the people with pre-existing conditions, only then would a state be allowed to change any of the regulations protecting people with pre-existing conditions. So it does not roll back those protections. It merely allows states to pursue them in different ways. But aside from that, the only other provision that would allow any flexibility at all is the provision that would allow states to change the essential benefit package, which, to me, that means flexibility. Well, let people buy what they want to buy. Let them buy the coverage that meets their needs.
Yeah,
of course, the architects of Obamacare don't like that, because they want you to have sky is the limit Cadillac coverage, because they want that money to be there to cross-subsidize, you know, other people, but it just doesn't work.
And I have to say, Cadillac coverage, but not Cadillac care. On a piece of paper, you have the coverage, but if you can't good care, if the doctors are leaving the profession because of the chaos, if the hospital care is going down, which I understand that it is, Devin, that's a whole other issue, it doesn't matter what you have on paper. What matters is the care that you actually get. You know what, Devin, if Obamacare looks like it's dying. Everybody says it's dying. Everybody says it will die if nothing happens. The House has reached an agreement for ill or for good. But the Senate's saying, no, we're not going to take that. We're going to come up with our own. It's going to take a long time if they can ever agree. In the meanwhile, if Obamacare dies, what happens in the interim?
Well, and that's the problem, is that if Obamacare could merely die under its own weight, you know, that'd be a blessing. But it really can't, from the standpoint that, you know, we have, there are subsidies in place that require, you know, everyone is still required to have coverage. There's still a mandate. And for those who qualify for subsidies, taxpayers are on the hook for whatever premium.
Okay.
Insurers, you know,
hold that thought.
Run through there.
Hold that thought. Dr. Devin Herrick is my guest with the National Center for Policy Analysis. When we come back, I want us to talk about what a single-payer health care system would look like. I want us to talk about whether the free market could actually step in and solve this problem for the American people. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Do you think affordable health care for all U.S. citizens is a right or a privilege, and why?
I'm definitely going to say it's a privilege. As a government employee, I am granted health care. And I see firsthand that for one, to have health care, you need to have jobs. So therefore, we need to continue to cultivate this environment that we're given the opportunity to have health care as well as jobs to all the American citizens worldwide.
Now, that was Kara McCullough, just a newly crowned Miss USA, who stepped into it big time when she said that healthcare was a privilege. How dare she say such a thing? Because we all know it's a right. We are born with a right to any operation, any doctor, any bit of healthcare, all the medicine we want as long as we live. Right, Devin Herrick of the National Center for Policy Analysis? It's in the Constitution, isn't it?
Well, unfortunately, to grant that right to every American, you have to essentially have coercive power to take money from other people, which is what Obamacare has really tried to do. In fact, you know, I've said before, it purposely made most people worse off, so a few high, you know, high-cost individuals could benefit. But what most Americans really want is affordable health coverage. What they really want is to be able to go to a doctor. They want it, they don't want a $10,000 deductible. They want a deductible that is within, you know, within reason, so that if they, you know, are in an auto accident that requires, you know, a hospital stay of a day or two, that they don't have to, you know, you take out a mortgage to pay the bill. And in many ways, I think really, you know, it's almost like raising your kids, you know, and spoiling your kids. Our healthcare system would benefit if more, if our coverage had limits. You know, $1 million limits, $2 million. You can decide, you know, which, where your risk aversion is. But by saying there are no limits, it's like pouring gasoline on a fire. You know, no wonder we have high cost health care. It's because there are no limits to what, you know, insurance companies and health employer plans and government has to pay for a lot of these, you know, conditions.
And that's why healthcare companies were happy, yay giddy over Obamacare, because people were going to be forced to buy insurance and forced to pay those high costs. So it's just a happy little cycle of draining the American economy, and mostly I'd say the middle class, honestly. It really hits the middle class the hardest. It's funny to me how the left always makes a mantra out of saving the middle class when it's actually the middle class they're trying to destroy, just like Karl Marx. It really is Exhibit A of that. But, Devin, do you think that Don't you think that the free market could come in right now and design some plan? They could, you know, be different people trying different things, and they could become so popular, they could just, it would just grow exponentially if somebody would come in with some good ideas. Don't you think?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's you know, really pretty simple. Let, you know, if you would allow insurance companies and employer plans to develop the type of coverage Americans can, you know, prefer and can afford, you'd see a lot of people who would jump at the chance and get those plans. But, you know, the plans wouldn't be ones that are designed to, you know, extort money from, you know, mortgage payments almost. from individuals that are of no use to them. It would be plans that are, you know, have benefit caps, maybe at a million or, you know, whatever your area of preference is or risk aversion, and allowed people the right to see a doctor they choose, but and had premiums that they could afford. I mean, it's flexibility. That's the free market is essentially competitors looking for something that a consumer is willing to buy at a price they're willing to pay. And, but Obamacare takes that right away because the designers had a different vision in mind. They wanted, you know, huge subsidies to go to certain groups and not others. They wanted certain groups to pay and not others. I mean, it was not designed for consumers. It was designed for bureaucrats.
Am I crazy to think that if the House and the Senate kept their promise to repeal Obamacare fully, which so far they haven't been willing to do, even though they said they were going to, that the free market would step in, like in 24 hours you'd see stuff springing up? I could see, you know, doctors forming, co-ops where they have a clinic and they maybe charge people a monthly fee to be insured just out of their own clinic. I can think of all kinds of ideas myself. Wouldn't that happen? And would people really be cast into a sea of destitution for their health care? Wouldn't there be some way to make it through that in the interim?
Well, you know, most people would be better off because most people would be able to buy coverage of their own choosing. In fact, you can still get that coverage. It just does not qualify as Obamacare compliant plans. I mean, you can go on ehealthinsurance.com and look for plans, and they're in like short-term medical. They're risk rated. The premiums are half what Obamacare premiums are. And there's a market for those, but you still would owe a fine under the current law. I'm already talking to doctors that are banding together, charging, retainer fees, oftentimes really small retainer fees. In some cases, it's like, $50 a month, but you have unlimited office visits if you need them. There's telemedicine. I mean, how come we can't talk to a doctor on the phone? Well, it's because of our bureaucratic system has created these perverse incentives to where your insurance company does not want to pay for, you as a consumer are on the lookout for a better mousetrap. The insurance company paying your bills does not really care about new ways of spending its money on you. So if we controlled more of our own healthcare dollars, I can't even imagine all the new services that would spring up as providers competed for, in innovative ways of attracting our dollars.
Yeah, which is exactly what we need. You know, I have to tell you, I don't want to spend the rest of our time on this, but I do want to make this point. It seems to me, and I haven't done a scientific survey, but that hospital care is getting dreadful. I've heard so many nightmare stories of people's experience in hospitals. It reminds me of when I was in Russia, when Russia, the Soviet Union, was getting ready to break up, and the hospital system there was so horrible. I had a doctor and a Russian Orthodox priest who worked in this hospital tell me, I did an interview with him for two hours, telling me about how families had to bribe doctors and nurses to take care of their loved ones. They had to go into the person's room and actually clean it because it was filthy. And they had to do the sheets and they had to do all the cleaning. I heard of a story recently of a hospital close to where I am where it was filthy. The sheets were not changed. The care was terrible. And that's not the only story I've heard like that. We have to get back to a competitive system where that's not the case. Don't you agree, Devin?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's our hospital system. We have some hospitals that are falling apart. At the same time, you have some hospitals that are continually building new wings and cranes above them. And it's has to do with market power, and it has to do with the convoluted way Obamacare treats one hospital versus another. And it's hospitals, I was an accountant for hospitals for years. And so, we need a system that rewards innovation, that rewards competition, and not rewards inefficiency
and dereliction of duty. Yeah. All right. In the remaining minutes we have, you just came back from Hungary at a conference, and you told me that the discussion, one of the many discussions there, was single payer, which means the government provides health care for everybody. you can see a doctor if they say you can see a doctor, or you can get a service if they sign off on it, or if they decide to pay for it. And if they don't, you have no choice. All right, tell me about that conference and what you learned.
Well, it was really interesting because this was a conference in Hungary, and it was physicians of Hungarian, you know, descent who were working around the world. One was working in Canada as a physician, one was working in Sweden as a physician, one was working in the U.S. as a academic medicine. But what was funny was they all liked the single payer systems, but they would say, well, it's good except for this. I mean, the Canadian physician said, oh, it's good except for the fact that there's rationing. And, well, okay, isn't that the whole point? And the physician in Sweden said, oh, well, it's good except for the bureaucracy. You know, I can only see two patients a day because of all the things I'm required to collect from that patient in terms of information, in terms of things I have to do. What got me was these are things that you should expect. I mean, it's a single payer. It's the only ball game in town. And so if you're the only ball game in town, you can set the rules. You can tell how little you're going to pay. You can tell what you're willing to pay for. You can dictate the terms that you will only pay if they collect all kinds of information, you know, from patients and dot all the I's and cross all, you know, all the T's and make sure they've heard about smoking cessation and how guns shouldn't be in the household. You know, it's just, it can be very, very bureaucratic. And they didn't realize that the cause was the very system that they were singing the praise of.
Well, it can also be politicized. You know, the people that are the favored people who think the right thing about things, who have the right way of assessing, belong to the right party, voted for the right candidate, might get care, and the other kinds of people might not get care. I mean, that is not outside of the realm of possibility, is it?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I was talking to an Englishman last night, as a matter of fact. I was speaking at an event, and a man who was born in England, moved to Canada, immigrated to the U.S., was talking about family members that month after month couldn't get, you know, gallbladder surgery because they were on a waiting list, and they came to the U.S. and got it immediately. And a father and uncle, I forget which, was in the U.K., and he had cataracts, and, you know, of course, the pressure in his eyeball got to the point that it destroyed the eye. But he had another eye, so that's why they were not concerned about the first eye. You know, things like that. And he was like, these people don't realize. He was telling me that the people that sing the praise of single payer don't realize that it's the seniors that take the brunt of the rationing because that's where a lot of the money is spent.
You know, it was very clear when Barack Obama was running for president that that was his position. I know you remember this. I think it was in New Hampshire, and a woman brought her mother to a town hall. Her mother was in, like 90 and had a pacemaker, and she was talking about what a miracle it had been in her life and how active her mom was and how happy and what a difference it had made. And under Obamacare, would she be able to get that? And Barack Obama's answer was, well, basically, no. He said maybe she could take a pill instead. Maybe there's something else we could do. But bottom line is, as he smiled, no, like an 80-something-year-old woman, no matter how vibrant, no matter how energetic, will not have the option of getting a pacemaker just because she wants to be healthy and she can afford it. And so it's not like it's been hidden, Devin. It's pretty clear that people will not have the freedom to get what it is that you want, to buy for your children the kind of health care you want them to have. That father that was on that Dallas CBS 11 report might not have had those surgeries under a single payer. They may not have signed off on that. So,
well, in fact, that's the kind of rationing that all single payer systems use. If a U.S. single payer system did not apply that rationing, it would not be following the playbook of single payer systems, and it would actually be more expensive than our current system. So people don't realize it. That's how it's supposed to work.
All right. So recently, President Trump took a big hit because he mentioned and bragged on Australia's healthcare system. I don't know anything about Australia's healthcare system, nor do I know much. I don't know of a system in the world that was better than what America's system once was. Do you?
The system he's talking about are hybrid systems. They're single payer for most people, but there's a little way to opt out. You know, if you're wealthy, you can have private insurance and maybe 10% do. But essentially, he's singing the praise of the healthy people that were able to see a doctor easily because, if you're in a politicized system, that's where you put the money. It's called the politics of medicine. Most folks are healthy, so what you do is you make it easy to see a doctor. But if they need an MRI, well, the Canadian physician I talked to said, it could take 2 or 3 months to get an MRI. I said, what do you mean? They're cheap. Why would you ration something, a diagnostic tool like an MRI? He's like, it's not really the machines we lack. It's the radiologist to read to interpret the scan.
Yeah, there's only so much good health to go around, and it has to go to the right people. So, you know, that single payer, that's what the Obamacare folk wanted. That's what they might get. I don't know. But I myself am rooting for the free market and hoping that Congress, including the Senate, will wise up and repeal Obamacare fully and let the market step in. That's what I'm rooting for. Dr. Devin Herrick, Senior Fellow at the National Center for Policy Analysis. Devin, very nice to meet you and hope that we can talk again.
Well, sure. Thanks for having me.
Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.